Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Mavs fans, friends, welcome to Pod Maverick. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined by Josh Bow. It is about 10:30 on Friday, April 3rd. The Dallas Mavericks just fell to the Orlando Magic 138-127, but we have a lot to talk about. Josh, how are you?
Doing great. It's great that there's something to talk about after these last couple of games.
Well, and really... Really, not just the last couple of games.
The last 3 months.
Really, but we're talking in the middle of the second quarter of this game, being like, this is a dog shit basketball game. What are we going to talk about? Because you said there were 22 free throws in the second quarter.
It was first half, but I think most of those 22 came in the second quarter.
I mean, insane. The game, like, so for everybody who watched this game, you know, kind of your standard Mavericks, what we've experienced the past month, where in the first quarter, maybe not even the past month, like the Mavericks play hard ability has sort of died these last 2 weeks. And you know, that's not a criticism. It's just sort of a statement. You know, they're not playing for anything other than seeding in the lottery, but they still have games to finish. And as we've sort of noted time and time again, they have too talented of a roster to actually be able to they can't sit nine guys is kind of what I'm getting at. Like, so, and you know, they won the Portland game in sort of shocking fashion after how kind of bad they'd been playing. And you know, you look at the schedule and you just have to think they have at least one more win in them, and you never really know when that's going to be. They come out, they play, they don't really have defensive principles right now. Like, I wouldn't say that there's a single thing they try to do to an offense other than let them get into the paint and score, which is what happened to Orlando tonight. Orlando shot 65% in the first quarter, sort of setting the tone. And if you're and if you're like me watching this game, and like I did the recap tonight, and it didn't really occur to me that Cooper was scoring that well. You know, like, I'm watching the game, and it wasn't until he hit 35 points where I was like, oh, shit, he's at 35. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're going to kind of talk about Cooper's game at length, because that's the part that anyone will tune in for. But, you know, the short gist of this game is the Mavericks were getting the pants beaten off of them in sort of the second and then in the third quarters. And then in the fourth quarter, Cooper Flagg, who was still in the game, just decided that he was going to take most of the shots, which we're fine with. Yeah. Mavericks lose, but I think we got to talk about, you know, Cooper's game at length here. What did you see tonight? What enthused you?
Well, this is what it looks like when he makes jumpers, which is 51 points. He actually didn't do a lot in the paint tonight. He had some terrific finishes, but he had 7 buckets in the paint, which is still a lot. He was 5 of 9 in that floater range, which was good, because he's been kind of off in that. His in-between game has been a little off in the last couple of games, but he was 6 of 7 from mid-range, and he was 6 of 9 from 3. So what, that's 10 of 16, my quick math on jumpers, which is obviously like 10 jumpers is the most he's made in a game. I'm just going to say that. I'm not even going to look.
The jumper's been off. It's fine. Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's been off since he returned from the foot sprain.
And he was gearing up toward it right before he got hurt. He was shooting the ball much better from the outside. So that was kind of the thing. It was not only does he need to make him, he needs to take him because defenses have been sagging off of him so much. And why would you know the Mavericks have negative floor spacing at times? Why would you ever, you know, give Cooper any type of runway going into the paint? And the last month, basically since he's come back, you know, the Mavericks tried to play him with PJ Washington and Najee Marshall and made the spacing even worse. They finally, the last couple of games, have put him with a little bit more shooting, with Ryan Nimhard, a real point guard in the starting lineup. But still, like tonight, it's Nimhard, Christie, but then, you know, Najee and Gafford, that's two not, so still playing next to two non-shooters. So it makes it hard. Like, you know, defenses are just, they're going to give him jumpers. That's going to be his thing. Not to compare him to one of the greatest players of all time, but it was very similar, you know, just very similar to how teams guarded LeBron in his first two or three.
Only he can shoot the ball better than LeBron.
Yeah, yeah, I think so, right?
Cooper's got a much nicer looking jumper than LeBron did at this stage in his career, which is not, like, that's fine. You know, that's not a
criticism whatsoever. He cannot shoot threes. Yeah.
And the confidence level is just nice to see because that's what happens. What we've really, and you've seen Coach Kidd get into to Cooper about this. He has passed up a lot of threes the last 15 or so games because he's not confident in the shot. Tonight, he hit a sidestep three. He hit a step back three. There was a lot.
Was that his first step back three? I don't think I've seen him take one of those.
None are really coming to mind. Yeah. I mean, it's there's been a lot of catch and shoot. There's been a lot of stepping into the three. Really, he loves that sort of Kevin Garnett range where he's kind of just inside the top of the circle. That's just anecdotal, of course, but he's good at those shots. And so watching him shoot 6-9 from three tonight, which is preposterous. Like, my favorite one was the last one that got him to 48 points, where he tries to score at the rim, gets his own offensive rebound, says, fuck it, dribbles out to the corner, and effectively takes like a fadeaway three.
Yeah.
Like that, it looked like a Vince Carter shot, to be quite honest with you. I mean, look, it's hard to get locked into these games. It just is. They're not playing for much. But the fourth quarter, I'm watching this game going, and I'm texting a group chat I'm in going, all right, Cooper's got 40 points with 8 minutes left. Oh, shoot, 44 points with 4 minutes left. All right, 48 points with 2 minutes left. And it's like that side of appointment viewing, like I wrote this in the recap, this is going to be one of those games where people lie that they actually saw it. You know what I mean? Where it's like, yeah, I remember Cooper's 51-point game. It's like, you weren't fucked. Nobody was watching this game. Only hardcore psychos were, like us, and that are people that are here in our podcast. By the way, we love you guys. This is like a legends are built kind of game where it's like, oh yeah, do you remember when Cooper did this? And Mark Falwell said something that was very, very funny to me where he said, you know, Cooper does this on Mavs Legends night because, you know, they're honoring Derek Harper with the bobblehead. And like, I like it when teams pay attention to their history, and the Mavs have done a pretty good job of that this year, even though it to some people, it feels a little cynical. I like that stuff. So Cooper scoring exactly 100 points between Mark Aguirre bobblehead night and Derek Harper bobblehead night is really awesome.
That's
so
funny. Yeah. That's a fun fact.
Yeah.
And then another thing is, you know, it's nice that he did this. It's not like he did this against the Washington Wizards or the Brooklyn Nets. I think the Magic stink something fierce. I don't think they're a serious playoff team. Sorry to the random Magic fans that might be listening to this podcast for whatever reason. No offense. I just don't like your team. Nothing personal. Just don't like the way it's built. But they're still trying to win. You know, they are trying to desperately be out of that play-in. You know, they desperately want to be in the sixth seed and avoid the play-in tournament. So this was like a game they had to win. And they played like it. You know, they had one of their best offensive games of the season, and they kind of whipped the Mavericks defense's ass pretty much from opening tip to the final buzzer. So it's not like, you know, Cooper did this. And the Magic are a defensive team. They've got a bunch of big guys that feel tailor-made to bother Cooper. Between Paolo, Franz, and then even like Bane and Suggs are not big, but they're for physical. Lack of a better word, they're girthy. Yeah, physical. They're
Gogo Batoze is a huge person.
Yes. Also, you know, their defense is their calling card. You wouldn't have known it watching tonight because, you know, they dropped 138 points, but that's more about the Mavericks.
Yeah.
But so I think that also matters. Like this was a real game, you know, a lot of games in March and early April in the NBA feel really fake and fugazi. This was a real game. So I think that matters even more. It was a competitive game. He definitely got like to 50. The game was kind of over. When he got to 50, it was still like, you know, stone's throw maybe, but for the most part, they were leaving him in to get 50. Cause as soon as he got it, I think he subbed out. Yep. But that's okay. Who cares? He's the first teenager to score 50 in NBA history, which I did not realize.
The Mavs go crazy. Check. Well, I want to say something and I want you to go check Mavs PR while I'm doing this. The Mavs PR account was hilarious. Okay, so because today was Good Friday, neither Josh and I had childcare today, and you know, on days like today when we each got to work, but there's no childcare, there's even less Mavericks consumption. So I don't even know if Josh knows that this happened. So today in the Brian Windhorst podcast, whatever it's called, Hoop Collective podcast. One of the almost called it the True Hoop Collective podcast.
I think it used to be True Hoop. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So Tim Bontemps does the MVP and kind of awards race straw poll, and you know, I've talked with Tim. Tim is my friend, but I don't like this poll. It is a push poll. What a push poll is it is designed to elicit a specific response. So by putting the data out into the universe, you're more or less confirmed, like you're pushing
bias.
It's confirmation bias. And I'm sorry, he disagrees with me vehemently, but I'm sorry, it is a push pull because just because it's predictive every year. And as a result, that to me is a push pull, like you're setting the agenda, whether you mean to or not. Anyway, There was a rookie of the year element of this today. And do you know what the rookie of the year element was from 100 potential voters? Do you know what the scoring was? Did you see this?
I didn't see it, so I'll take a guess. But I'm going to guess. I mean, it's like just first place. So 100 people pulled 100 voters.
Yep.
So you're saying how many of those 100 first place voters voted?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say Khan probably got somewhere between 80 to 90.
Yeah, Khan got 80 of the first place votes. So Cooper, like he ran away with it.
Yeah, I mean.
And so you're looking at this stuff, and like you and I had a brief Twitter interaction about this today. Khan Knipple's season is historically efficient, which I think is if they give him the award, it is justified in that sense. However, when you look at the highs of Cooper's ceiling paired with the overall gross numbers, like the things that they have literally always awarded this on, Cooper's season is better. And I can't help but wonder, what will a 50-point game do to that voting? That's right. Ash Boeing says, I wonder how they would vote now. It's fun. I actually like, and you know, people are yelling at me about this take, but my take is I actually want Con Knipple to win it. Because there's nothing funnier than your college roommate winning a rookie of the year award vote after you have a historic season. Because if there's
you
one
want
thing
pissed off Cooper,
I want a pissed off Cooper. Now, lots of people are saying, Kirk, you don't need a pissed off Cooper. He's going to be pissed off because that's how he operates. I get it. But I still like the narrative structure of it. Because look, you go look through the rookie of the year votes over the years. They don't get it. Like it's very rarely the best, like the person who ends up being the best player in the class.
Whoever puts up the best stats.
Yeah, very rarely is not fair. It's just not a straight, it's not a one-to-one comparison, is what I'll say. So that was just, and so did you go to Mavs PR, the Twitter account?
I am.
You scroll through it, and as he's hitting milestones, yeah, they're just keeping updating. They're like, he's 35-point games. He has more 35-point games than everybody else. 40-point game. He's the only 40-point person, a rookie to have 3 40-point games since Michael Jordan and Allen Iverson. 45-point game. He's the first rookie to have a 45-point game since Michael Jordan. Like, just incredible stats. Like, really incredible stuff. And I just, you know, we haven't had a lot to celebrate lately, so I think it's important that we do.
No. And the con thing, yeah. It's going to piss a lot of people off, and it's whatever. That's kind of the whole point.
Yeah.
I don't blame, you know, Mavs fans should want him to win. Like that's the whole point of this. If like you should, like my perspective is different, but like the people that are like actually like invested in this emotionally more than me should, like, that's the whole point. Like you should get mad. You should want to, you should want your guys to win. Cause if you don't, then like, what's, why are you even watching the games? Unless you're like just like a weirdo.
Which,
like,
a lot of people aren't watching the games. That's actually
also fair. That's also fair. But I don't mind Khan winning because, like, it, you know, if it was just, if it, if Khan was just, if it was mainly just because the Hornets are really are a good team, then I think there'd be more like, you know, hey, what's going on here? But he's actually like, his numbers are, I mean, his numbers are incredible. Like it's not, it's not like he's that far off numbers wise. But so that's whatever. I think this game might influence it because, I mean, these people, like the voters, I mean, they don't turn their ballots in, I think, until like what, the day after the last game of the regular season or something like that. So this stuff will definitely be on the top of people's minds. And I mean, we've seen people vote for Monte Ellis for all defense. Like,
shout out Wayne Price.
You have no idea what voters will do. And this stuff will absolutely influence them. And if a bunch of, like, I mean, it's pack mentality. If there are a bunch of media hits and pieces and podcasts this week about Cooper Flagg, they will do it. Like, I think we've heard stories about, like, a lot of voters that aren't paying as much attention will just vote for, like, whatever Zach Lowe is voting for because they should, you know, because that's just kind of how the state of NBA media is this year. So, yeah, it's whatever. But I'm thinking, like, I'm seeing all these, you know, Cooper is the first rookie to do this. He's the first rookie to do that. Is Cooper having a better rookie season than Luka's rookie season?
I don't know. That season had veterans that were clearly in the way, and it was really problematic for how the Mavericks had been playing.
I mean, so did this team for Cooper.
I don't think, but I don't necessarily feel like the veterans,
they were all hurt. Have been,
no, but I don't feel like Najee and Clay are trying to get theirs at the expense of Cooper. I felt that way about Wesley Matthews and to a certain extent Harrison Barnes. Like, the Mavericks were going nowhere fast, and I don't think that the veterans on that team had really a conceptual grasp of the fact that Luka was the future. Like, he was doing crazy stuff, but there was just that was an oddly constructed team. Rick Carlisle was weird. Like, Rick, do you remember? That's like, we know now from McMahon's book that, like, Rick lost Luka like 5 games into the season. Like,
yeah, that was, you know, the ostracizing Dennis Smith early on.
Yeah. And so there, it's hard to say to, like, it's nowhere near an apples to apples comparison. I think the expectations for this team were higher than that Mavericks team. And then they just got so thoroughly ass whipped in the first 20 games of the year that it sort of changed things. I will say that I feel, you know, in a developmental comparison point, where Cooper started and where Cooper finished is at a, he was lower than Cooper. And is finishing higher than, I'm sorry, he was lower than Luka, but is finishing higher than Luka. Luka, to me, kind of did the same thing all year. He was pretty good from the get-go, but it took him
just got more volume toward the end of the year to boost the numbers.
Because he didn't have scoring games like this. And
no, he did not score this many points.
It's crazy to think about, really. But that's where, you know, and we've talked about this on repeat. People will forget this in history, but year two Luka was such a fucking demon. It's hard to contextualize because he just came in and was an MVP. I mean, I think he finished fourth in the MVP voting that year in his second year in the league. Like, that Luka was a special Luka. Like, to, and so when I'm, if we're doing comparisons for the sake of just discussion, expecting something like that out of Flag is unreasonable.
Yeah. I mean, Luka was first team all NBA his second season. I don't think Cooper is going to do that, but.
But you never know, man. I
didn't think he was going to score 50 points in a game this season, you know?
I'm glad you said that because I actually wrote, like, this was the one bullet point that I wrote in the game. Is I said, you know, 70-plus games in the year, I have no fucking idea what Cooper Flagg's ceiling is. You could tell me anything. I was talking about this with a friend of me of the show, Matt Moore, and it's just, you could assign an archetype to Cooper for every kind of top-tier superstar right now. You could say he's going to be a Kawhi Leonard occasional burst scoring guy who plays lockdown defense on the best player. you could say he's going to be like a mini Giannis who scores like 28 points a game, just driving to the rim like a madman. You tell me an archetype and I could talk myself into it when it comes to Cooper. The realistic thing, and I can't remember who said this to me on Twitter, but it was a guy who's saying that the Cooper Flag archetype is Cooper Flag. Like he is a one of one player in a mold we have not seen before, at least in this style of basketball.
Yeah, you see bits and pieces, but it all coming together in one player is kind of where it's special, because it's like the most common comparison I see is Kawhi, and Kawhi was not this polished as a scorer his rookie year, like not even close. Like I think he was a better defensive player than Cooper was when you could their rookie years, but in terms of offensive like it's just, it's like you see bits of Kawhi and then it's like, yeah, but Kawhi wasn't scoring 50 points as a rookie. And you see the off ball splash defensive potential with him is really special. Yeah, it's remarkable. Yeah. And also like he had 51 points and he also had three steals and a block, and had a couple of nice defensive plays in the second half, which directly led to offense. It's crazy. I don't know what his career is going to look like, because what coming into the draft, I mean, he went from like defensive, like in high school to defensive specialist. Then in college, it's like defense first, but like all NBA level defense with all-star level offense. It was kind of where he was in college. And then he gets to the NBA, and now it's like, oh, I don't know. I guess he could be like one of the three best players in the league now. Like, it just keeps going up when you think about where he was his senior year of high school in terms of like that theoretical ceiling. So I think you're right. Like, who knows? Like, he could keep soaring. Like,
it's so fun because, you know, you watch the beginning of the college season, you got Jamal Mashburn sort of firing his mouth off about how he would take all of these other guys over Cooper. And he wasn't alone in this take. Like, I got lambasted on social media saying Cooper Flagg was like ducking this group of guys, which is why he reclassified. And it's like, no, he beat them all and then also wanted to make money earlier. That's why he did it.
Because he's good enough to play. Like, look enough, at it. Like, he enough, wants right. to get to the league.
There's just, yeah, sorry. And now the Mavericks are, you know, in an interesting position to where they're going to be able to add, like, regardless of where they draft, if they slide to ninth or jump to fourth or jump to second, they're going to be able to add a quality player, and that's really exciting. All right, we're a little bit past, we're well past halfway, but I wanted to get the Cooper stuff out of the way because that sort of thing deserves focus, and then we can talk about the rest of the game. All right, so there are three ways to support our show if you're at all interested. The first is by giving directly if you want to. There are a couple of links in the show notes. That money goes directly to us. We do appreciate the super chats that people do through YouTube here, but YouTube takes like a 50% cut of that. And then, you know, there's also listening to the ads. That's how Josh and I get paid. Obviously, we've not had a great year with the Mavericks have not had a great year, which means we've had a little bit of a down year in listening. But, you know, I've had a good time sort of soldiering through. The third way is by telling your friends, grow the show. You know, we're going to keep trying. Off season's on the way. We'll have fewer pods, of course, but I'll be hoping to do, you know, interviews with people, bring on some of our draft guys, like just talk a little bit more about basketball. And, you know, up in, you know, Josh and I'll probably record at least once a week up until August, in which case maybe we will just walk into the ocean never to return. But that's for another day. So stick around. We'll be right back after these ads.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Thank you so much. Let's see how many people we actually have here concurrently live. I will do a secondary show if there is the juice for it. So I see some of our regulars who are here. If people want to talk about this game with me after, I can host the secondary show, but I want to see some interest in the comments, because otherwise I'm going to go watch the episode 5 of Invincible on Amazon, which I really want to do. I'm also playing Skyrim again because I'm a total sicko.
I love that.
Well, it's just, you know, it's easy to pick. I can put it down, like, because I've played it before. Like, somebody told me I needed to go play Hades 2, like, right now. And I'm like, you don't want me starting Hades 2. Like, I don't want my wife to kill me. Like, I won't be able to put that game down. Anyway, did I take a break or did I just keep talking?
No, you took a break. Okay. I think you did.
I'll be able to answer. Fuck it. Who cares? All right. So let's. All right. So we can talk about a few more things. More cynical side of me on this one. Shout out to head coach Jason Kidd for getting ejected. Really going to bat for Cooper Flagg, which would have loved. Would have loved if Kidd had done this 30 games ago. I'm feeling very cynical about Jason Kidd. What was your take on the whole thing?
Well, I mean, it was one of the worst missed calls I've seen all season. I mean, if you're going to crash out over a missed call, I mean, that was absolutely the one to do it. I mean, yes. Bane literally, I mean, he's grabbing Cooper's elbow and like dragging it down. Like, it almost looks like an intentional foul. You know, when you're beat and you just don't want the guy to get a layup and you just kind of wrap him up, like, that's what it looked like. Yeah, it was long overdue. You wonder what the season, I mean, I don't know how much it matters, but it's like, you know, where was that 4 months ago? Cause it was like this 4 months ago with Cooper. Yep. And it's like, would it have killed you to do this a little bit more? Cause again, if you don't, it sucks. It's one of those things where it's like, you shouldn't have to work the refs to protect your players and to get the calls right or to just favorable calls. But that's how it is. So the fact that like it took Kidd this long to get ejected, and you know, he's not a coach that gets ejected. Like, we just kind of have to like live with it. Like, it's just part of his coaching profile, so to speak. So it's like, you know, getting mad at water for not being dry. Like, it's at a certain point you're just like like you're just fighting against nature. Like, we could just yell that Kidd should kick and scream more often, but it's clearly just not his temperament when it comes to coaching. But yeah, you know, I mean, did you see the shot, like, when it was all going down with all the technicals and like Najee was getting into it? Like, it looked like there were like 8 Mavericks surrounding that ref. And there was a part of me that was like, someone needs to pull that ref out of there. Cause it looked like they were like all surrounding him. And it didn't, obviously nothing was going to happen, but it was just a funny visual. Cause it looked like it looked like they were about to, you know, WWE, you know, bad guy heel stomp on the baby face there for a second. But yeah, the only thing I could say is I wish it would have happened sooner. And it was a ridiculous call, and I'm not a refs guy. Like, it was a ridiculous call, and I don't blame anyone for crashing out over that. And I kind of, you know, it kind of sucks that it's April 3rd when that happens, when they really probably should have been raising a stink in December.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a Bucks writer that I've known for years and years, say, trying to find the tweet here because it made me laugh out loud, because he's essentially saying that, you know, the refs did a really good job of making a terrible situation worse. Like, that's just one of the many times this year that NBA refs have managed to escalate some. Yeah, here, okay, I found it. The no call was ridiculous, but give the refs credit for completely escalating their own mistake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they made it worse.
And this is very fun. I'm getting a couple of questions in the chat. Just no, so I think I am going to do a secondary show, guys. I see Mav41 fan hanging out. He's asking some questions about some things, which I actually will address in a follow up podcast, or a follow up show, which I'll let Josh go and do from here. Just sort of indicating I'm not ignoring your questions. There's some good stuff down there. Kidd also doing it after having a bad PR week is fucking perfect to me. Like, I was just laughing. And so for anyone that just hasn't been paying attention because you have better things to do, earlier this week, Mark Cuban went on a podcast, said, of course, Jason Kidd was involved with the trade. Jason Kidd was caught off guard during the Tuesday game and essentially yelled at Brad Townsend saying, like, when are we going to move on? Like, a perfect non-denial. And then in today's media availability, lawyerly went like just sort of doubled down, indicating where he's like, you know, I didn't really know about it until the 11th hour. I couldn't have changed it. And, you know, just like very well done evasion on his part. I was tickled.
It was very well done because nothing he said, like everything he could have said was probably true, but it's also like all on technicalities. Like, yeah, maybe he did learn about the trade at the 11th hour, but that doesn't mean he wasn't part of the brain trust and talking to Nico in the months leading up to the trade and, you know, discussing Luca and discussing, is this guy the right fit for our franchise moving forward? Yada, yada, yada. But he gets to say, oh, I didn't, you know, I wasn't on, you know, I wasn't on the trade call. I wasn't briefed on the trade, but, you know, that doesn't mean he wasn't talking to Nico about it. Like every week, you know, they work together.
He strongly implied that it was above his pay grade, which L-O fucking L. Jason Kidd is not going to let a pencil dick guy like Nico Harrison tell him anything. This is a two-time Hall of Fame point guard. And frankly, as a coach, quasi-exec, with a history of power play moves. Like, this man moves softly and gets things done. It's why he's managed to stick around at the Mavs. It's why he jumped from Brooklyn to Milwaukee and sort of became de facto GM there. None of this should be news to anyone who's actually followed Kidd's career. And I doubt Mavericks fans have really followed Kidd's post-game career. And I got a fair number of people who are just like, well, can't we move on from this? I'm really tired of talking about it. And it's just, for me, the thing is that I said this the other night, like Kidd is not a particularly good regular season coach. Like he is now under 500. That just has to matter at some point. And he keeps talking about this, like, well, we have a lot going on here. And it's like, I don't trust Jason Kidd with the future. I don't think anybody should. And you know what? He's likely going to be the head coach. And that's that. But, you know, the results are kind of like on the wall. He's never won 50 games without Luka Doncic. He's never won a playoff series without Luka Doncic. And he's had two other, you know, top tier players. So, you know, call it what you will. It's just very funny that this stuff happened, like tonight's stuff happened within a game and within all this stuff coming out. It just feels very WWE. And that made me laugh.
Yeah. And then, you know, another part of it is just it's so messy. Like, people are like, you got to drop it. You got to move on. And it's like, okay, well, Mark Cuban's the one who went on a podcast and said all this. Like, we're reacting. Like, if Mark Cuban doesn't get on a podcast and talk about this, we're not talking about the Luka trade this week. Like, it's not like we're pulling this out of thin air and just deciding, hey, let's get mad about the Luka trade again this week.
Right.
It's the people in charge of the organization are messy and forces us to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Because we have to talk about it when they talk about it. If we don't, we're not doing our jobs, and like we have to, like it's just part of the deal.
No mistake. We all wish Mark Cuban would stop talking. It's just very hard, and it's like, you know, it's very funny to me now, 10 years after I really started working in this, where people are like, "Well, of course Mark Cuban is full of shit," and I'm like, "It took you this long to figure it out? Like he might be, but either way, he kind of caught Jason Kidd unawares to a degree, which I just found a little bit funny.
I think Kidd even said he called Mark about it too, which is kind of funny.
Did he say that?
I thought I saw him say that in the media availability this morning that he called Mark to talk about it.
I have heard some things, but I don't.
That'd be funny.
I'm not repeating anything I've heard because don't make news.
That's funny.
Anyway. What a fun game. What a weird Friday night thing. We only got a few of these left. This Lakers game on Sunday went from being very interesting to very depressing in a hurry because Luka Doncic hurt his hamstring in the third quarter against the Thunder last night, and it was not a good injury. So it's one of those where the Lakers medical staff might all lose their jobs because he may be, like, in hindsight, he's, like, grabbing his hamstring throughout the first quarter, and it's just it's not a good look. But you know, we'll be back. We'll cover that game. We got a couple more next week, a couple more late games, and then we're done with this. You guys stick right around. I'm gonna let Josh, you have anything else?
No, I'm good.
I'm gonna run the music and then I'll fire up our secondary show. It's been a couple of weeks since I've done something like this. If you have questions, I'll give everybody the rundown here. Those of you in the live show, stick around. We'll be right back. I'll post this show tomorrow. Josh, I've scheduled and edited a lot of stuff already, so there shouldn't be really anything you have to do. Everybody be good. We'll talk soon. And how do I do this? I can't remember. Oh, here it is. All right. And go Mavs.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.